Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And by Antioch University New England, offering doctoral degrees in clinical psychology, environmental studies, and marriage and family therapy, as well as master's degrees and certificates. antioch.edu/nhradio.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Single-payer health care. It's an idea that's percolated in American politics for decades, mostly on a far back burner. But now the concept is bubbling up again with a bill in Congress and in New Hampshire. In Washington, Senator Bernie Sanders has reintroduced his single-payer bill, which he's done for years, but this time he has more than a dozen co-sponsors. And among them is New Hampshire U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen. At the same time, there's also a proposal in our legislature to establish a single-payer system at the state level. And while it's unlikely either of these would pass, given strong political opposition, we're going to take this moment today in the Exchange to look at the arguments once again, especially about the impact on quality of care and cost to taxpayers. So let's hear from you. Your questions and comments are welcome. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have four guests for the hour with us in studio. Representative Peter Schmidt, a Democrat from Dover and sponsor of the bill that I mentioned that would establish a single-payer health system here in New Hampshire. And Representative Schmidt, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
You're more than welcome, Laura.
Also with us, Representative Barbara Biggie, a Republican from Milford, Vice Chair of the Commerce and Consumer Affairs Committee. And Representative Biggie, good to have you. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Dr. Joseph Hannon, former Republican representative from Lee. Dr. Hannon is no longer in active practice. He is working with several organizations on substance abuse, prevention, and recovery. And Dr. Hannon, thank you also for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And also with us, Dr. Robert Kiefner, a retired family physician. He practiced for more than 30 years in Concord. He's a member of Granite State Physicians for a national health plan. And Dr. Kiefner, thank you also for your time.
Thank you, Laura. It's great to be here.
Well, and Dr. Kiefner, I want to start with you. What's the hope of single payer? What's the problem that you hope it will solve?
Well, over 30 years of practice in Concord and having practiced in various circumstances, I witnessed patients throughout that time suffering immensely because of the structure of the current system. If you call it a system, it's actually rather a hodgepodge. Patients often could not afford their preventive care, their follow-up care for chronic conditions. They could not afford their medications. And the entire system was developed into something of a monstrosity for the physicians as well in terms of trying to advocate for patients and affecting pre-approvals for medications, for referrals, for radiographic exams, et cetera.
So increasing costs for patients and inability to get the treatment that you felt they needed. Didn't the Affordable Care Act help out with that?
The Affordable Care Act was a step in the right direction, but I think even without the current Republican efforts to sabotage the ACA, it would have unraveled on its own because there was no cost control in it. The insurance companies were still and are still able to raise their premiums without much regard for you know, the impact on the patients.
So it helped, but it wasn't enough.
Right.
Well, we'll definitely get into all the arguments, pro and con, this hour. So, Representative Schmidt, to you next. As I said, you've got this bill for a single-payer system here in New Hampshire. What's the hope and what's the guarantee that a single-payer system would help solve some of the problems that Dr. Kiefner raises?
Well, I'm not sure that anything is a guarantee, Laura, but the reality is that, as Dr. Kiefner was just saying, there are longstanding efforts in Washington to sabotage or do away with the Affordable Care Act. And given the fact that that now we have Donald Trump in the presidency, the danger is much greater of the Affordable Care Act going away. And we have something like 45,000 people in New Hampshire who are who are insured under the Medicaid expansion provision of the Affordable Care Act, and there are probably another 40 or 50,000 people who are insured under the exchanges as well. That's roughly 100,000 people whose health care will go away if the Affordable Care Act collapses, because expanded Medicaid is based on the Affordable Care
Act. Sure. So how is that, though, an argument for a single-payer system?
Well, it's what we have to do is have some kind of an alternative to nothing, because if those 100,000 people suddenly are dumped on the market having no health care other than going to the emergency room or hunkering down, then we are in a very bad situation. And I think we have to begin someplace. And one of the current proposals that I have is to have single payer.
What do you think, Representative Biggie? What problems do you see with single payer?
Well, Laura, as far as I can see, and of course I'll be hearing the bill in the Commerce Committee also, I try to keep my mind open. But my past experience, just reading and listening to all sorts of news reports, etc., single payer obviously means the government is in control of all aspects of health care. I see it as socialized health.
So the government,
I really don't see that helping the situation by making everybody, all individuals, like have a thumb down on them. You will do it this way. There is no customization at all for your particular specific situation.
So the problem that you see with the government running healthcare is that it's one person making the decisions for everybody, and that's concerning for you.
Well, not one person,
but one entity.
A committee,
yeah.
One entity, etc. And there's no leeway that I see right now. So I'm looking forward to hearing the bill in January.
Dr. Hannah, let's hear from you, too. Your concerns about single-payer health care.
Well, single-payer in New Hampshire is a big concern for me because, first of all, there's no real way to pay for this in this bill. I know that the bill is not expected to go forward to be successful, but it's got to have something that says it's going to work. Vermont had their program, and they got rid of it, I believe, in 2014. I remember I spoke about that on the floor of the House. When there was the same very similar bill that came forward, they couldn't afford it. They couldn't afford raising taxes on their people. And this is the idea of single payer is kind of a misnomer. There's no one person paying for it. The taxpayers pay for it. The people of New Hampshire are going to pay for it. The poor and the middle class are going to wind up paying for it, either financially or by virtue of decreasing resources. When you have more of something available and less people willing to do it because prices are going to go down for the providers. Doctors are going to have to go to the state to find out how much they're going to earn. Now, that does happen now with insurance companies, but it's going to be even a greater effect when the state is the only one doing it. When you have one person negotiating, there's very little you can do to control it. We like choice in our lives, but this eliminates all choice from the healthcare system. And I agree with Dr. Kiefner about the Affordable Care Act and how you know, it would unravel on its own eventually. There weren't any price controls. Insurance companies can charge more. But this is, in a sense, even worse because now the state is going to be the only one deciding. There's no competition whatsoever. We would be an island surrounded by a pseudo-free market. We don't have a free market in healthcare.
I'm just wondering how you feel about single-payer broadly on the national level, recognizing what happened in Vermont and so forth. But nationally, what are your sort of philosophical arguments against it?
Well, if I had unlimited resources in my own wallet, I would say, great, let's do it. But that's not what reality is. It's not something that is going to provide the best health care to the most amount of people. I think it will provide adequate health care to everybody. I wouldn't even say adequate. I would say it would provide some health care to everybody. The wait times will increase. We know that. We know that availability of treatment and is going to go down. And we know that the outcomes in some diseases, like certain cancers, are not going to be as good as they are currently. We look at certain places in Europe and Canada, and their outcomes are not what they are here. You have a better chance of survival, 5-year survival rate for most cancers in the United States.
I definitely want to get everybody in on this, and I can see everybody wants to jump in, but also invite our listeners to join us again, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Today in The Exchange, we're tackling single-payer health care again, looking at the arguments around it and some bills that are on the table in New Hampshire and in Washington. Again, you can join us with your comments, questions, 1-800-892-6477. So I can see everybody wants to jump in, and that's great. Dr. Kiefner, Dr. Hannah raised a point that comes up a lot, that doctors and other providers would make less under single payer, and therefore, you know, they wouldn't provide the same level of care. One Boston pediatrician wrote in the New Republic, "Why would we stay open 7 days a week like we do now, or take calls at 2 a.m. like we do now, if we're getting paid less money?"
Well, I happen to think that's fundamentally incorrect, and I would also take issue with Representative Biggie about the nature of single-payer and expanded Medicare for All as a socialized system where the government's in control of everything. Actually, single-payer or expanded Medicare for All is a publicly financed but privately delivered entity, as we see in Canada.
So no more insurance companies, but still private doctors and private hospitals. But
correct.
They're getting paid through the government.
They're getting paid through the government. So in effect, as far as patient choice is concerned, there would actually be greater choice because patients would not be confined to the provider networks that are now mandated by the various insurance companies.
And you could see anybody you wanted because they're all paid by the same
entity. And relative to the quality of care, we currently rank 37th in the world in this country relative to measures of health, according to the World Health Organization, whereas countries with single payer not only cover everybody, but they have enhanced quality of care at about half the cost. So that's kind of where we're coming from.
Would doctors make less, though, under single payer? Because there's a big concern
that they would. At least in Canada, the reimbursement for primary care is about the same. Specialists make a little bit less. But as a primary care physician, I don't have a big problem with specialists making a little bit less.
To you, I think, Representative Biggie, first,
yes.
What about the choice issue? Dr. Kiefner's right, you know, under your insurance plan, they tell you who you can see. So is there an argument that you would have increased choice under a single-payer plan?
Well, Laura, first, I look at quality of life. And if you've ever been at the DMV, motor vehicles, and stood in line, waited, sat down, waited for your number to be called, go, you know, talk to somebody and then sit down again and wait till your number's called to solve an issue or whatever. That is government control. And adding more, having everyone covered sounds wonderful. And I'd love to see that too. However, the quality of life issue, I cannot see that getting any better. If you go to see the doctor, in quotes, it may be the nurse practitioner more often in the future with the single payer because there's just going to be less. Why would anyone want to be a doctor if they're not going to have control? And that's, you know, having private suppliers, the doctors, et cetera, but they're under the government control, that's not private.
Can we address this fear, Representative Schmidt? Because I think Representative Briggy is bringing up a concern that a lot of people have, which is if it's run by the government, it's going to be sort of big, faceless, ugly, like the DMV, which, you know, with all due respect to the DMV, nobody wants to hang out in that waiting
room. That's
true. Especially on a Friday.
Well, I'm glad to have these misconceptions out in the open so that we can address them, because I'm 79 years old. I've been on Medicare for 14 years, and I don't wait in any lines that I didn't wait in before. I mean, we wait in line at the grocery store to pay our bill sometime to check out our groceries. We wait in line maybe if there's a gas crisis or whatever. But this idea that the government has its thumb on everything, it tells you what to do, you don't have any freedom anymore, this is just flat out wrong. I'm sorry. It just doesn't exist. I go to whatever doctor I want to. I've had operations under Medicare. I've had all kinds of treatments. I go to the doctor I want to. He or she sees me when my appointment is available. If I have an emergency situation, I go to the emergency room, I get immediate care. For all other care, I wait until I can get an appointment. So this idea that the government controls it is just completely wrong.
Well, could we address the Medicare analogy? And I'll turn to you, I think, Dr. Hannon. I have some friends who couldn't wait to turn 65. And I said, gee, why is that? And they said, because Medicare. We don't have to worry about the bills anymore. They were private entrepreneurs. They had their own little business. So healthcare was quite expensive for them. What about the idea that Americans have experience with Medicare? And, you know, Representative Schmidt is saying it's great.
Well, I'm glad he likes waiting, because that's what does happen sometimes. Your wait times will increase. If you're going to have decreased pay for specialists, you're going to have a longer wait to see specialists.
Is the Medicare example that Representative Schmidt raises a valid example, comparison?
I don't think it's a direct comparison. I think, you know, Medicare is pretty much it is subsidized care. It's not directly government controlled care, because, you know, Dr. Kiefner is right. It is often private in many states. Privately run, but you have the Centers for Medicare Services setting costs. You have they determine how much you're going to get paid, what's going to be reimbursed, just like insurance companies are run, which I'm also not a big fan of the way it's done. But this does not allow people to go to, I believe the bill in New Hampshire is not going to allow people to go out of state for coverage if it's offered in New Hampshire. Well, you know, there are some great doctors in New Hampshire, some great providers, but we are right near one of the best healthcare centers in the world. We have Boston very, very close by, and we have a lot of people that go there for care. If the similar type of care is offered here, you won't be able to go see another specialist there.
Sometimes your private insurance says you can't go to Boston.
Sometimes it doesn't, but if you don't have private insurance because it's illegal in New Hampshire, then how are you going to go there? Or when I was practicing in Florida, we had a lot of snowbirds, and they came from New Hampshire. They came from other places up north in New England, and they had their insurance. We were out of network for providers in other states, but it was still reimbursed. So people that live here, that travel, their emergency care will be paid under this bill, which I'm glad to see. But if they have routine care and they're, you know, staying with their sister in Arizona for a month, or if they're living in Florida for a couple months of the winter to get out of the cold, they're not going to be reimbursed for routine care at all. They're going to have to get different insurance to do that.
Dr. Kiefner, do you want to jump in?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I am personally more of an advocate of a national health plan as opposed to the states doing it, because if you have 50 states, each with a redundant hierarchy and bureaucracy, it becomes almost as bad as the insurance company. So I would be pushing for H.R. 676 in Congress, which now has 120 co-sponsors, as well as Bernie's bill in the Senate.
Because of the complexities that
exactly.
that's raised by having 50 states with
right.
50 different
but
approaches.
I would also mention that there are increased waiting times in Canada for elective procedures and such. But people aren't going bankrupt in Canada, and people aren't dying the way they're dying in this country for lack of insurance.
Well, as I suspected, lots of feedback from our listeners, including a Facebook comment from David, who lived in Canada for several years. He says, the Canadian system is good for routine health care and for emergency care, but has some significant issues with the availability of elective and non-emergency specialists and treatments and surgery, David says. At the same time, David says, I'm completely frustrated by the administrative and bureaucratic overhead in the U.S. insurance system, but very happy with access to elective care and specialists. So we will follow up with this comment from David after a short break and a lot of the other comments that have been coming in. You can join us as well, 1-800-892-6477. More on single payer in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is NHPR. It's 9:19. Good morning. And whether you're looking for the latest from Washington or from the State House, you turn to NHPR. And at the end of the year, we turn to you to help pay for the listening you do. When you make a gift now in the next few days, you'll help us plan and prepare for the future. Make your gift today at nhpr.org. Turning partly sunny today, high temperatures from mid-teens northern New Hampshire, mid-20s in the south. It'll be mostly clear tonight, low single numbers either side of zero. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Manchester Choral Society and Orchestra, performing Bach's Christmas Oratorio and holiday music on December 16th and 17th at St. Joseph Cathedral, Manchester, mcsnh.org. And Norwich Solar Technologies, providing comprehensive solar energy systems for forward-thinking New Hampshire communities, schools, and businesses. NorwichSolar.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're re-examining single-payer health care. And let's get your questions in. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, the number 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look at the pros and cons from a medical and budgetary perspective of a possible single-payer healthcare system. And all of you, let's go right back to our listeners. And just before the break, I was reading a Facebook comment from David, who lived in Canada, saw some problems there, but also sees some problems with the U.S. system. And here's how David concludes his Facebook comment. He says, the challenge for the U.S. going forward is to gain more efficiency and coverage, both quality for covered people and for covering everyone, without surrendering access to the services insured people in the U.S. now have. And Representative Schmidt, I'll turn to you first. This is the issue that David lays out so perfectly. He says the Canadian system was great for routine care, emergency care, but when it came to elective and specialists, there were some problems. I wonder what you think.
Well, Joe said earlier that he thinks he's happy that I'm happy waiting in line. No, I'm not happy waiting in line, but the world doesn't bow to my instant needs where I can come waltzing in at any time under any circumstances and immediately be served. That might be the case that I can pull up to the gas pump and there's nobody waiting, but if there is somebody there ahead of me, I have to wait. So that's life. But the reality is the rest of the world, the rest of the advanced world has national health care. Everybody else in the world is wrong, and we are right in this country where we still have, even with the Affordable Care Act adding 10 or 20 million people to the rolls, there are still millions of people in the United States who have no health care whatsoever. And there are still thousands of people in New Hampshire who don't qualify for expanded Medicaid, who don't have employer-funded health care, and they can't afford the individual market, which is ruinously expensive. So guess what? They don't get any health care at all until it's so bad they can't stand it anymore and they go to the emergency room. And the doctor says, oh, too bad you didn't come in a month or 2 months ago when we could have fixed it. Now we're going to have to amputate or you're going to die or whatever.
Here's an email from David in Amherst who kind of echoes what you say, Representative Schmidt. David says, without choice, where government controls all, is socialized. David says, none of these is true in single-payer systems in other Western democracies. And he says, none of these is true in Medicare, which is, in fact, single-payer supported health care we already have in place. David says, currently we pay four times more per person than comparable countries, but get far less than citizens of those countries. So, Representative Behe, let's tackle that. People look elsewhere and they say, wow, they're getting more health care than we are and paying less for it.
Well, Laura, they may be seeing they're paying less, but it's in every aspect of their lives. More taxes, you know, more fees. that's where they're paying it. They may not see it because it's probably in their paychecks that more money is being withdrawn that
will
go to the program.
So the comparisons aren't—they're not valid in a way.
Some way, it's not free. Somewhere, each individual is paying for it. And if I might add, Representative Schmidt mentioned the waiting in line. Well, the answer, the solution is to have more doctors, more medical professionals to deal with the larger population that's going to be coming to them. Then the lines would shrink. And is that going to happen? How many doctors and professionals will we need to be added in New Hampshire to have that happen?
Let's take a call. And this is Griffin in Vermont. Go ahead, Griffin. You're on the air.
Howdy. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I'm a member of the Vermont Worker Center, and we run a campaign in Vermont called Healthcare is a Human Right. And I'm a member of that campaign because I do have healthcare from the New Hampshire employer, but I can't afford to use it because my deductibles are so high. So I'm effectively paying so much a month for healthcare that I can't even afford to use. And universal healthcare would provide me with access to healthcare. I also just want to touch on what happened in Vermont a couple of years ago. There was a plan put forward that would have afforded universal health care in Vermont, but the governor refused to look at it because it would have raised taxes slightly on the ultra-wealthy, such as himself. And so there was a plan in Vermont that would have been successful in providing universal health care in the state of Vermont. Thank you very much.
Wasn't that a 9% or 9.5% tax on businesses, Griffin?
Yes, but currently businesses are paying, on average, 13% for health care. For their employees.
I see what you're saying.
It actually lowered taxes on small businesses and raised taxes on places like UVM Medical Center or large industrial places. And I know in New Hampshire with like DHMC, Dartmouth College, where there's like multi-billion-dollar institutions, they can afford to provide health care. They can afford that money when so many people in New Hampshire can't afford to go to the doctor.
Well, Griffin, thank you for the call. And, you know, as we're getting into money, what do you think, Dr. Hannon? You know, pay now, pay later. Representative Biggie said people pay. They just don't see it in their health care bills. They pay it in their taxes. And then we've got Griffin making the same argument, but from a different perspective. What do you think about this? How would we sort this out?
Well, I don't have all the answers, obviously.
Yeah.
And no one in here does. But I hear... you know, look at some of the reasons we have the problems we have. A lot of these stem from the government actually intruding in the healthcare system from the start. We've had this for over 50 to almost 85 years in this country. We have EMTALA. If you go to the ER, like Representative Schmidt said, you can get service. So the poor are actually and the uninsured are going to the ERs for primary healthcare, and that is a big problem. That was one of the big problems that was used to help push Medicaid expansion through. Now the hospitals are going to get some money to reimburse themselves for that, reimburse them for that care. The problem is that started with the government involving themselves. Now it's illegal for them to not take patients for free if they're accepting Medicare and Medicaid dollars. Now hospitals were not turning people away before; people were being served, but now they have to take anybody, and people know they can go to the ER for care. You also have a lot of regulations and paperwork. You know, right now, and I don't think anyone here is a big fan of the current system, we have doctors spending about a fifth of their time doing non-medically related paperwork, non-patient related paperwork. And nurses, it's even worse. This will reduce that, but you're also going to reduce the quality of care. You're going to have less people providing.
People get paid less?
Well, if we have just a New Hampshire system, obviously, which
yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I'm talking a national system.
Would be different. It would still be less, but it would be less everywhere. And healthcare would be available to slightly more people, but it would be available at a less quality level. So I disagree with the assertion that healthcare is better in other countries and that have socialized medicine. If you look at the metrics that they use to determine some of these factors, they use socialized healthcare as one of those determining factors. If we have access for everybody, access does not equal treatment. Access does not healthcare. Because you have an insurance card, because you have a Medicaid card, does not mean you're going to get good quality service. I know that Medicaid does not reimburse well for all professions. Some it reimburses very well for. Pediatricians get better pay for Medicaid services. But less doctors are taking Medicare and Medicaid. 20, 30 years ago, most doctors took Medicare. Now those numbers are decreasing. So if we look at that as a metric of what's going to happen with universal coverage, you know, well, universal coverage would mandate they'd have to do it, so you're forced.
But I guess your argument would be then, and correct me if I'm wrong, if we had single-payer health care, doctors would get paid less, and so there'd be just less people interested in going into the field. Is that the point that you're trying to make?
To a degree. I mean, that's not the main problem, and I'm not even as concerned about that as the primary reason. You're going to have people going into medicine. Whether you're going to have the best and the brightest going in is a different story. You know, a lot of doctors have been surveyed in the past saying that they wouldn't go in, wouldn't recommend medicine for their children. They wouldn't stay in if the system continued the way it does. I left not just because of the Affordable Care Act, but because of the way the system had been run. We had more things put in our way in medicine that prohibit the actual time you spend with patients. The insurance model that we have now does also not allow a doctor-patient relationship. The doctor and the patient have almost no say in the cost of what healthcare is right now.
Because you have to go so quickly.
You have to go so quickly. So we're going to take that microcosm of the bad insurance model and make it the government being the single insurer. It's not going to be any different. There's going to be no one saying, okay, I shouldn't go to the ER for 10 visits. Now, there may be a law saying you can't go to the ER under a single-payer group, but people can go to whoever they want. So they're going to go absolutely wherever they want, as often as they want. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? You know, people need to go to the doctor, but do they need to go anytime they feel like it for any reason to any specialist they want? Those wait times are going to increase.
Well, let's talk about the costs then. And maybe a little bit later we can talk about, okay, if not single payer, then what do we do? But what about the costs, Dr. Kiefner? You know, there are concerns that this would be a budget buster, especially with an aging population.
I think there's an awful lot of money that's wasted in the system right now, in particular with the, again, the redundant hierarchies of the insurance companies, where you have CEOs making $40 to $50 million a year. And for the various mergers taking place, if CVS and Aetna merge, the current CEO of Aetna could stand to make $500 million. And there's something pretty obscene about that. And it goes on through the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, and all of the players in healthcare that want to take a piece of that action. As I've referred to it in the past, it's like there are too many piglets and too few teats in healthcare. There's an awful lot of excess spending going on. And we could cut into that considerably by estimated $300 to $400 billion per year by going to a single payer system. And as far as the costs are concerned, if you look at the total cost that we're going to be paying under a single payer, it would be substantially less over time, according to the Congressional Budget Office.
So the big concerns that I'm hearing from all of you are cost and quality. And here's an email that has to do with the quality side. This is Bob in Nashua who says, one has to look no further than the VA healthcare system, which is a single-payer system. Nationwide news in the past year has uncovered many horrors for many vets trying to use this VA system. Management of the Manchester VA is presently under investigation, as well as in many other VA hospitals in other parts of the country. So, Representative Schmidt, I'm going to throw that one to you since you've got this bill for single payer. It's funny, earlier somebody said Medicare is a great reason to do this because people are generally happy with Medicare. And here's this person saying the VA system is a reason not to do it because of some of the problems we've seen.
I can't really comment on the VA system, even though I am a veteran. I don't access the VA. And I do think that the government ought to look into every complaint and see whether they are justified, and if they are, to correct them. But I do know Medicare because I've been on Medicare for 14 years, and it works. I've had a quadruple bypass operation. I've had kidney stones a couple of times and so forth, all the joys of being over 65. But the reality is I don't – if I go to the emergency room and I have real terrible pain, as I had with a kidney stone recently – I was seen immediately.
Because you had that Medicare coverage.
No, because I presented at the emergency room. So people have emergency situations. They should go to the emergency room, and they do get seen in the order of priority. If you had an accident or an explosion or something like that where you had multiple cases and the hospital, the emergency room was overloaded, then they do triage. Dr. Hanna knows that. They do triage, and they say, well, this guy's dead. This guy has to be seen immediately. This guy can wait a little bit.
So what do you think, Representative Biggie, about the VA comment? Is that a valid comparison? We talked about the Medicare comparison earlier.
It is. In fact, I have a family member that works for the VA in another state as a doctor. And the morale of the doctors is way down because the administration, I will agree that the administration is what brings the morale down. At the different, they're like little fiefdoms, the different VA hospitals. And that needs to be attended to. I agree with Representative Schmidt on that. But that is, if anyone can walk in a VA medical center and look around at the lines of chairs of people just waiting. I used to live in Florida, and my parents would go to the VA medical center in Ocala. And the doctors, the team was wonderful, but you really had to wait your turn. And it's, I don't know if the, you know, I can't speculate on the quality, but just making you wait and everybody's so glum brings everybody's quality of life down, I feel, even if it's just for the short period of time that you're in the facility.
What do you think, Dr. Kiefner? Is the VA a valid comparison, or is Medicare the better comparison?
I think Medicare is the better comparison because the VA is essentially a socialized system, whereas Medicare is not. In a socialized medical delivery system, the hospitals, the doctors, everything is owned and run by the government. The single payer that we're proposing, expanded Medicare for All, would again be publicly financed but privately delivered. And I think you bring up great points about how we need to improve the VA. The VA is an excellent resource for a lot of veterans. A lot of my colleagues who are veterans have really had very good care there. There are bad stories. And I think with an overhaul of the insurance system to allow private care of those patients, that we might see some benefit to veterans.
How is it still privately run care if everybody's being paid by the government?
Well, because each doctor or hospital still runs independently of that. They get a certain amount that they have to deal with each year from the government. And there are options that doctors can be paid essentially a fee-for-service type of payment if they desire under single payer. So it's not, there's actually still a fair amount of government intrusion in Medicare. And those of us who have dealt with it, it can strangle you as a provider. But again, what we're looking at is improved and expanded Medicare.
So wait, if the government requirements of Medicare strangle you as a provider, how would single payer be better?
It would be better because, again, we would redo Medicare to get rid of a lot of the regulations that are in place now and to make it more user-friendly for everybody.
Go ahead, Dr. Hannon.
I'm glad you brought up the strangulation part about that. Say I owned a coffee shop and the government dictated how much I would have to charge for a cup of coffee, and then they said, okay, you have to use this size cup, and then you have to write a page and a half report every time you give someone a cup of coffee. And then you had to have three people in a back room and a lawyer telling you, you know, how hot the coffee should be and, you know, all this other stuff. It would be ridiculous, especially if you had to give coffee to anybody who showed up to your place. That's what single payer would be. And it's a lot like he said, it's what Medicare is now. But the doctors have no say in the cost, and neither do the patients. You have less control over your health care under a single-payer system than you even have now under the current system. Third-party systems are not necessarily the best way to cut costs and to have accountability. a true free market doesn't really exist in at a large level anymore.
In terms of healthcare,
how
we pay it.
It's vastly, there's very few. We do have some people that are fee-for-service. I was fee-for-service myself, which was great while it lasted. But when people are mandated to have insurance or mandated to have single payer, you're not going to have as many people doing that. You're going to have some concierge docs that only take care of a select few, which is a great service, but it's not going to be the norm.
Well, coming up, a lot more questions, comments from our listeners, and then also, okay, so if single payer isn't viable, what else might be better? Because I'm hearing complaints from everybody about the current system. Bob and Nashua, thank you for that email. You can send us an email as well, exchange@nhpr.org. And if you're on the line, we'll get to your phone calls in just a moment, 1-800-892-6477.
Hi, it's Rachel Martin for Morning Edition. We're at a point in the year when we set our sights to the future while reflecting on yet another year gone by.
Only for Muslims, but also for those of other faiths that need a place to worship.
Special counsel Robert Mueller's asked the White House for documents and information.
This month, the consortium broke another story, the so-called Paradise Papers.
Support the reporting that keeps you connected all year long with your year-end tax-deductible donation today. It is easy to give. Go to nhpr.org, and thanks.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking again at the arguments around single-payer health care. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. By the way, we want your vote for the best exchange shows of 2017. Help us out with this. Go to our website or our Facebook page, cast your ballot, and then we'll replay your favorites during our holiday break at the end of the year. So go to our website or our Facebook page and jump in on what you think some of the best exchange shows of 2017 have been. Right now, let's go right back to our listeners and to Francis in Bedford. Hi, Francis. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Wonderful show. I have 2 points I'd like to make. One is for-profit health insurance, and I think one of the doctors on your program mentioned it. When Aetna is bought out by CVS, the executive, top executive, is going to get a $500 million payout. Well, somebody has to pay that salary, or that payout, and it's the rate payers, the people who pay for insurance. A few years ago, when William McGuire left United Healthcare, his payout leaving the door back in October of 2006 was $1.8 billion, with a B. And the rate payers, the premium payers for United Healthcare had to come up with that $1.8 billion to cover a one-man salary. For-profit health insurance,
yeah.
Their administrative costs, 34%. Medicare's administrative cost is less than 1%. We need a single-payer system all across the country, but Republicans are fighting it because big donors, big insurance companies, take care of those congressmen that fight single-payer. The other thing is, if you remember back in 2012, during the presidential debate, there were 11 Republican candidates on the stage at St. A's. And Congressman Ron Paul was asked, well, what happens if somebody has a life-threatening illness, they don't have the money to pay for it, cancer, heart, or whatever?
Francis, I think your call just dropped. I do apologize for that. But it does seem like his initial point, Representative Biggie, was, look, under this privately run system, some people are getting incredibly wealthy, and meanwhile, you have people who have no coverage at all or very, very skimpy coverage, and they get very, very sick. So he's saying, let's take the profit motive out of this and focus on care. I wonder what you think.
Laura, thanks for the question, and Francis also. The United States of America is a capitalist country, and I say that in an optimistic way. And I almost think, I mean, it's a huge amount of money that Francis was mentioning of the outgoing executives of the different organizations. It's also income envy. That's the way I see it. The system needs a lot of overhaul, but I don't forecast that single payer at this point, what I'm hearing, would be the solution.
Well, I think people like Francis are sometimes reacting to, you know, stories and we've seen pictures on the web of, you know, people lining up for hours. I heard a story a couple months ago. There was a free health clinic and crowds and crowds and crowds of people came, waited in line for hours because they don't have access to care. They don't have health care. Or if they do, they can't afford it. So, you know, people see those crowds of desperate poor people lining up all day for a free health visit. And then they hear about somebody in the insurance industry making $5 million and they think, no, that's not money well spent. So I just wonder how you, you know, it's envy, but it's also need.
I can see that it looks incongruous. However, you mentioned it's free. Single payer, everybody's going to say, hey, it's free. So there will be huge lines everywhere.
Is it a bad thing if lots of people are accessing health care?
No, that's wonderful. It's wonderful. But it shouldn't be such an extreme. And that's where quality of life comes in. You know, standing in line for something like that, I feel for them. I really do. And I like to see everybody have, you know, good access. But that doesn't mean they're going to be healthier individuals because they still have to access on a timely manner and preventive care, et cetera.
Do you want to jump in, Dr. Kiefner?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think whenever we have these discussions, a fundamental question comes into play, and that question is health care a privilege or a right? Mm. And those of us who are involved in single-payer efforts feel that health care should be a right for everybody in this country, not a privilege. If we don't look at it that way, then people are going to die because they do not have access to care. And more people will be filing for bankruptcy. So the system as it exists, a capitalist basis that we have, is not working. It does not work in healthcare. It might work when you're shopping around for cars or other commodities, but healthcare is different.
Go ahead, Dr. Hannon.
I hear the same debate. Is it a right or a privilege? And I don't think it's either. It's a necessity for many, not all the time. Some people go years without seeing a doctor and they're still alive, surprisingly. Not saying that's a good thing and we should use that as a public policy. But the idea that it's a right, you only have a right to something that that's not someone else's. Now, that may sound like, you know, it's not the most well, let me put it this way. If you don't have a right to something that someone else does. I know that if plumbing became a human right, you wouldn't have the right to the plumber's labor. But according to, if you say something is a right, you have a right to that other person's or that other industry's their goods. Now, it's a service industry, believe it or not. It's not a right. People go into healthcare because, you know, a lot of people really want to help people, obviously, but they also have to make a living at it. People don't develop drugs, good drugs that save lives, because they, you know, want to necessarily. They're not all humanitarians, obviously. They have a profit incentive.
So the profit motive improves the outcomes
profit
and the quality.
Profit gives us better quality. We have better medicines. Now, there are obviously things we can do to change some of those costs, and some of those are government regulated. We can't buy drugs from Canada or Europe, and that does raise costs. None of that was addressed in the Affordable Care Act in any meaningful way. So the costs are excessive, and that's one of the biggest driving factors of costs for the elderly's health care is medication costs. One thing we're all ignoring is, and not in this room, but I mean in general, one of the biggest driving factors for healthcare costs are things that can be changed by individuals. So we hear about preventative care and we want people to get seen in a timely fashion. That's a great thing. But lifestyle changes alone, just exercising more, eating right, not smoking, not drinking, things like that can absolutely affect quality of care, quality of life, and decrease healthcare costs in some estimates by over 50%. Of what we're seeing. So these are huge things that have to be addressed, and they can be addressed in other public policy ways, private manners. We don't have to just force people to be giving their service to other people.
So this is an extreme answer to a problem that could be solved in other ways.
It's a simple answer that's not in the discussion. We can change, we can have lifestyle changes, we can affect change drastically just by doing some of those things. Instead of waiting until you're 65 and you need dialysis, which you can get here on Medicare, but you can't necessarily get it in some of these European countries because you may be too old for the cancer treatment. You may be too old to get dialysis. You don't qualify for the new experimental drug or the new drug that may be available in the U.S., but in Canada, you can't get it.
Because the commission that's in charge says, no, you can't have that.
It's just not available.
Which happens now under the private system as well. We've all made those calls to the insurance company and said, why don't you cover X? And they say, because we don't. But you're saying it would be worse under a single-payer system?
Absolutely. And I'm not a big fan of all the insurance companies and drug companies, obviously. But you know, they're a necessary part of the system that does need to be changed. But insurance companies, and I'm not insurance companies, drug companies do donate a lot of money, and not a lot of money. They donate a lot of pharmaceutical products to people that can't afford it. There's programs for anything. I rarely had a patient, and I know a lot of doctors that have the same experience. If they need something, they can work with the drug companies to get medications for their patients often. It does take work, though.
Let's take Parker in Hebron. Go ahead, Parker. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks. I think this is a great discussion this morning. My experience, I'm a type 1 diabetic. I have had it since I was 16. I'm 64. I lived 14 years in England and in France, and my experience with those systems was absolutely brilliant. I'd just like to make a couple other comments. When I came back to the United States, I found healthcare is expensive, and what I also found was that I paid the same level of tax here in the United States as I did in both England and France. So the idea that it's more expensive hasn't been true in my case.
Parker, I just want to ask you a question since you have experience with Britain and France, you said, right?
Yeah.
Did you have care ever rationed? Because that's the concern that, you know, there's some government commission that says, no, Parker, you know, we don't think that that's valid for you. And then you're kind of stuck.
No, not at all. And you know, Britain and France are not the same as Canada. But I never had rationing of care. In fact, I had insulin that was given to me, and I didn't have to pay for it. But people say I paid more taxes, but when I came back to the United States, my taxes in the United States were the same level as my taxes in England and in France.
So, all right. So a positive experience from Parker. And I wonder what you think, Representative Biggie. You were the one who said, well, you maybe do end up paying more in some of these socialized medicine countries because the taxes are higher.
Laura, I've been looking again at the HB 1793 that's sponsored by Representative Schmidt. The funding, where's the money going to come from for the state to run this single payer system? What's this called? Single Cure Act. And it looks like the money's going to come from general funds, which is our taxes and their revenues, and also the highway. And I'd like to ask Representative Schmidt, why is the highway involved in funding single payer in New Hampshire?
Well, how would you pay for single payer in New Hampshire, Representative Schmidt?
Well, that certainly is one of the issues that is unresolved in this bill. But as everyone has already recognized, this bill is not very likely to become law at this particular time with Republican majorities in both the House and Senate and with a Republican governor. But democracy is more than just going down to vote once a year or once every 2 years for federal offices. Democracy is a participatory game, if you will, and we need to get the citizens of New Hampshire involved in the situation that we are confronting if the Affordable Care Act goes down.
So under a single-payer system, either with your bill at the state level, and we talked about how that might be difficult to have a state-by-state-by-state, or nationally, would taxes go up here in New Hampshire or nationally if we went to single-payer?
Well, I don't know, but the bottom line is we're currently paying for the quote-unquote system. Dr. Kiefner said earlier, can't call it a system. It's really hodgepodge was the word he used, and that's what it is. And everybody is different in this country depending on what their particular circumstances are. Are they employed by a company that gives them health care access, health care policy, health care coverage at no cost, or are they participate, or they work for the government and they have everything paid for, or do they have no health care at all other than going to the emergency room? So it's a hodgepodge. And the reality is that I come back to, again, Medicare everybody on Medicare pays $100 a month out of their Social Security payment, and you go to the doctor when you need it. And it works fine. And essentially every other country in the world has national health care, and yet we don't. And we're right and they're all wrong.
Well, lots of – go ahead.
Especially when health care in this country is not the top ranked in the world as far as the people are concerned.
So we're not sure. Maybe I'll throw the cost question to you, Dr. Kiefner. Again, this is a concern that people have, and we do hear about – Medicare and Medicaid, our health care entitlements, those costs are going up, causing budgetary problems, deficits, and so forth. So would this really be any better? Would it make it worse?
I don't think there'd be any doubt that taxes would go up. But in terms of what comes out of each individual's pocket, considering that they have full health insurance, their actual out-of-pocket expense would go down with time. And that's been confirmed by studies, again, through the Congressional Budget Office and through some of the healthcare economists who have looked at this carefully, like Gerald Freeman from UMass. We do need further study of the economics of single payer, no doubt about that. But I am confident that it will improve access, reduce costs, reduce the misery of withholding care and bankruptcy.
Well, care would still be withheld, right? It would just be somebody else making the decision. Instead of an insurance company, there'd be a government panel saying, you can't have that. It's not on the formulary.
Right. Possibly.
So, yeah, and we don't know.
We don't know.
We can only look at what happens in other countries. Here's an email from Karen who says, insurance companies ration much more than any single-payer system. Karen says, I can't get an asthma drug here that I got for free in the U.K., she says that's not because the meds were bad, but because it is too expensive. Then on the other side, we've got Matt who says big government is undesirable, in my opinion. Your guest is correct. Envy is a weakness and not a basis for public policy. Thank you for that email, Matt. Scott on Facebook says the VA is not a single payer system. It is a single user system that has been underfunded for years. Scott, thank you for that. And then Zachary on Facebook says, and maybe we'll close out with this point. Thank you, Zachary. I don't think this needs to be an either-or argument. America, for years, have prided ourselves on the ability to see ideas around the world and say, we can do this better. Zachary says, our current system is broken, if only for the reason that people sometimes choose to see a doctor or go bankrupt. He says, let's take a look at systems around the world, bring in experts of these systems to our country, and see if we can figure out a blend that works for America. So real quick, in the interest of time, Barbara Biggie, what do you think? Because clearly people aren't happy with the current system either. No one on the show today has said the current system is great.
I'll boil it down to life is messy. And we can straighten it up, but it's still going to be messy. It's not going to cover, everybody will have access to single payer with the single payer system. However, that doesn't mean they're going to be healthier.
Well, we'll close it out there for you. I want to get others jumping in, too, on this question, bringing everybody in, Dr. Kiefner, and saying let's do a blend because, we've heard concerns about single-payer doing it a la Canada or France.
I would quote Winston Churchill in when he said that Americans will usually arrive at the right conclusion only after exhausting all other possibilities.
Dr. Hannon, real quick.
Well, since we're doing quotes, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. There are some of the nine scariest words in the English language. That was Ronald Reagan.
So not a government system. But I wonder, Zachary says, look, let's find a blend that works for us.
We've tried to do that for the last 50 years, and it's actually increased costs.
Okay. Go ahead, Representative Schmidt. Last word, real quick.
We need to pull our head out of the sand and address the issue.
Okay. Zachary, thank you for helping us close it out today. And all of you, maybe next time we will talk about what another system might look like, given that, there are concerns about all of this. I want to thank all of you for coming in very much. Interesting discussion. And thanks to everybody who called.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.